Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you so much for joining us this week. And you know what? We have a special surprise for you. Due to popular demand, we put together a show made up of some of our most memorable material, including interviews and topical pieces. We've had such a positive response to some of our past shows that we wanted you to have the chance to hear some of these interviews and segments yet again. So you know what? Sit back, relax, and enjoy all the craziness that's gone on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
I am thrilled to introduce you to my next guest. He's one of the most recognized film and television actors in the world, and he's won numerous awards, including an Emmy and People's Choice Award, not to mention he even has his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He played John Jacob Astor in the Titanic, and you've seen him for years as savvy and ruthless businessman Victor Newman on the number one daytime drama, The Young and the Restless. Eric Braden, welcome to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Merci beaucoup et bonjour, Kelly.
Merci beaucoup, Eric. Now, I have to start off by asking...
Tu parles français aussi?
Oui, je parle français à cause que ici, c'est français à Québec.
Je ne peux parler beaucoup, mais un peu, un petit peu.
Un petit peu, c'est bien ça, c'est très bien. I wanted to ask you, Eric, you just were speaking in French, and I know that you actually weren't born in the U.S., you were born in Germany. Why did you actually decide to leave your home country to come over to the United States?
Oh, Kelly, that's a long story. I was 18 when I left, and after the war, you know, there was not much around, and America was always an adventure. You know, I'd seen all the films about cowboys and Indians, and America was just sort of, I think the cliche, the country of unlimited possibilities. So was Canada in the minds of a lot of Germans, for example, and a lot of Germans did come to Canada.
And how come you made the switch to go there?
Say what?
How come you made the switch to actually go to the States instead of here because of the television industry?
I had a cousin. She was a doctor. She taught at the Medical University of Texas, and she sponsored my coming to America, my immigration. So that's how I ended up in the States.
And did you always want to be an actor, Eric, or did you have ambitions to be a professional athlete? Because I know that you're very athletic. You play soccer, tennis, all that sort of good stuff.
Yeah, I had won the German Youth Championship in track and field and discus and javelin and shot put with my team. And I sort of played with the idea of acting a little bit here and there, you know. Found myself sitting at plays and wanting to play certain parts. In my mind, but never really entertained it seriously, no. And had a scholarship later on at the University of Montana in Missoula in track and field. And I studied political science and economics only for a year. Then I went to California. I took a river trip in Idaho on the River of No Return and was the first one with another guy to go up and down that river. No one had ever gone against the rapids and down again and survived it. So we were the first ones to survive it. We made a documentary film of it and came to California with that, to press conferences.
And then how did you actually get your feet wet in the acting business?
In the 60s, they needed a lot of actors who could play, who could speak German and play German parts. And that's how I started. But I must say, the first time I did it, I knew that is where I belonged. And the first time I did my first play, I really knew that acting is what I wanted to do. The play was by Jean-Paul Sartre, called Keen, in which I played the Prince of Wales. And I did another play by Tennessee Williams, and etc. And it took off rather quickly, to be honest with you. I did combats and did a series called The Rat Patrol and ran for a few years. And then I did a Broadway play with Geraldine Page and on.
And what would you consider, I guess, your first major break in acting?
A segment on Mission Impossible, where I played a Russian spy who quoted Shakespeare and was the first one to kiss Barbara Payne. And that caught the attention of someone on Broadway, namely the director, George Schaefer. And they brought me out, and I played the son of Kurt Jürgens, who then was a famous German actor, and Geraldine Page. And Clarence Williams III from Matsuan played my half-brother. And I get very good reviews for it. So did Clarence, and our careers went on. Anyway.
And how did you end up getting approached to play Victor Newman on The Young and the Restless? And did you have, you know, sort of any idea at the time that your role would become such an integral part of the show?
No idea. No clue. And I was asked if I wanted to meet with them, and I asked a friend of mine, Dabney Coleman, the actor who I play tennis with a lot, what's a soap? I had no idea what a soap was. And he said, do it, you'll love it. And I went to see the producers, and the rest is history. I wanted to sign a deal for 3 months, and they wanted to extend it, and I said, okay, for a year. And then I actually wanted to leave the show, because I didn't like the parameters of doing it daytime. The time is too limited. It's an enormous amount of work in a short period of time. And then they changed producers, and that changed everything for me, because they were, or he was, amenable to changes in the dialogue. And there you are. The rest is history.
And Eric, is it true that being on daytime is conducive, or is one of the best avenues, I guess, as an actor who has a family life? Because I understand, or what I've heard is that it's good, you can actually have time with your family as opposed to being off on locations all the time.
And that is true. That is very true. That's a very good point. A very valid point. And I must say I'm grateful, because I was able to coach my son and watch him grow up and coach him in soccer for years. I had personally won the U.S. championship in 1973, a team called the Maccabees, and so then I coached him, and since he was 5 years old or whatever. So, yes, daytime afforded me that luxury of coming home every night. You know, otherwise, as an actor, you go to different locations and or do plays in different cities, and so I'm very grateful to YNR, it afforded me to stay here and live a pretty normal life.
Now, you've been on YNR Young and the Restless for over 30 years, and you've created this character so powerful that anytime I speak to people, they either love you or hate you all at the same time. And has it been challenging for you, Eric, as an actor, to keep playing that line of being loving and kind, but kind of ruthless and controlling at the same time?
You know, I don't think about it, whether it's ruthless or not. I really don't. I've never been interested in winning popularity contests, and never. I don't give a damn. And I just do what is on the page and try to be as conscientious about it as I can. I have had a very good relationship with my fans over the years. I'm very grateful for that. And you just do the part as conscientiously as you can. And Victor Newman is indeed a complex character. I personally may disagree with a number of the decisions he has made, but nevertheless, you simply try to do every day what is in your power to do, to play a scene as realistically as possible. That's a challenge, as any actor will tell you, primarily given these rather artificial parameters where you have no time. You don't even really have a rehearsal. So you work at an enormous pace, and it's very challenging to make those scenes real, you know. But we have very good actors on the show. I'm very lucky to work with Melody Thomas-Scott and Peter Bergman and now Jeannie Francis and Joshua Morrow and Sharon Case and Michael Mooney and, you know, Michelle Stafford. I mean, we have wonderful actors on the show. So Christian Leblanc, and very blessed with very good actors. And I like what Maria Bell has been doing. The writing. So there you are.
And I wanted to ask you as well, Eric, in the fact that you know, you've been part of one of daytime's most powerful super couples, Victor and Nikki, played by Melody Thomas-Scott. Now, the two of you have this amazing on-screen chemistry. What has it been like to work with Melody for so long and, you know, keep the excitement and the passion sort of burning on screen?
I love working with her. I really love working with her. I'm blessed in that sense. So we have been getting along for over 30 years, and one or two, maybe little run-ins, but not really, disagreements over something. But generally speaking, we really have been getting along very well. Yeah. I adore working with her.
Do you ever have a laugh with her, Eric, about the fact that, you know, it's always you and Nikki being pulled together or pushed apart and then back and forth? Do you ever have a laugh with Melody about how long it's going to take before you're back together again?
We laugh at this stuff all the time. She has a great sense of humor. And prior to doing a take, you know, we usually make fun of it. And that's part of the challenge, is to laugh about it. And then, turn of a dime, you turn serious. And, we make fun of it all the time.
Joining us on the show is award-winning actor Eric Braeden, who stars in The Young and the Restless as Victor Newman. Make sure to check out his website, ericbraeden.com. Eric is also going to be coming to Montreal on Saturday, March 24th, as part of the National Women's Show. You can find out ticket information at nationalwomenshow.com. Eric, can you give us a brief idea of what your day is like on set when you're shooting an episode of Y&R? Because I think a lot of people don't realize how much work actually goes into daytime programming, especially when you have a popular character like Victor, who's in so many different scenes and so many different storylines.
I was here at 8 this morning, and we'll probably be home by 6, 7 at night, sometimes later, sometimes a little earlier. It depends, but I love it. So it's really not work in that sense. You know, I really enjoy doing it.
And do you get a chance to work out when you're at work, Eric? Because I know, like, you're very athletic, and I see you boxing all the time on the show, and I just wonder if you try to work your schedule in there.
I sometimes shadow box in my dressing room and do push-ups. But I usually work out at home or elsewhere every day. I work out once or twice every day, at least once a day, often twice.
And have you found that that keeps your head clear about everything else you have to do in your life, Eric?
You bet. It's the best medicine there is. Everything else, therapists and psychiatry, all that bullshit, is nonsense. Just work out. You know, really work out, get a sweat up, and you feel much better. And every person, every thinking person has conflicts and has stresses in life. You have to be, have to have a lobotomy not to think. So it's when you think about your relationships and people and family and the political scene and stresses, and the best way to relieve those stresses is not by drugs of any kind. No pharmaceuticals, nor recreational drugs. It doesn't work out. And then afterwards, have a nice dinner with friends or your family. But working out, in my case, boxing or lifting or playing tennis or soccer, whatever it may be, I do something every day. And it is vitally important. And I think we would reduce our health costs if a lot of people did that. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't grow up with that. In other words, you grow up with a certain discipline. When you're an athlete, you become addicted to working out. And that's a good addiction, you know?
You play such a high-powered and successful businessman, you know, on Young and the Restless. What's your take, actually, on the U.S. political landscape right now? Because, you know, the Republican nomination is coming up. And what do you think that's going to mean for Obama in the grand scheme of things?
Oh, I think it augurs well for Obama. I have a feeling he'll win again. Unless something very unusual happens to the economy, but the economy is on the way back. I hope that in the second 4 years, he's really going to be tough with Congress and attack those who try to undo him by any means possible. And I hope he goes on the attack. That was always the mistake of the Democrats before. They didn't hit back hard enough. You know, they didn't get back into the trenches. I personally think that he will win, and I think he is a very good president who had worked against enormous, enormous obstacles. He had to work against a Congress that was determined to finish his presidency after 4 years. And, I mean, they're determined, Carmela and Water. And I think he will prevail, because I think eventually Americans will see through it.
And if you were sitting in a Republican shoes right now and you saw the list of nominees, would you be upset? Because it seems like there is a lot of hot air and not a lot of substance right now.
It's a lot of hot air, and I would be very upset. And I hark back to the time when Republicans and Democrats made deals with each other, were ready to compromise, talking about the times of Eisenhower, even Nixon, and It all went downhill after that, sadly enough. but I've never seen this kind of chasm between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party or the rest of us as I've seen now. Never ever before.
No.
This is about as hostile of a Congress I've ever seen dealing with the president.
And do you sort of, because you come from Europe, do you keep an eye on what's happening over there? I know Greece is in trouble right now and a lot of the European countries. Does it bother you, Eric?
Well, of course it bothers me. And the difference is one of economic philosophy. A lot of people believe in Lord Maynard Keynes and the Keynesian solution to problems, namely more government spending in order to heat up the economy and in order to give unemployed people jobs, which we could easily do in America. We could employ millions of people if Congress were willing to appropriate funds to rebuild America's infrastructure. We need new roads, new bridges, we need all kinds of things. And you would employ people publicly. That's what FDR did after the Depression. So, but the same kind of philosophic difference exists between Christine Lagarde, who is now the head of the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and Angela Merkel, who is the Chancellor of Germany, who has to deal with internal political pressure, because the Germans say, listen, why are we saving and working hard when some other governments don't get their shit together? So it's an interesting debate right now. And of course, over here in America, you have those who preach austerity and don't want us to bail out. Unfortunately, we only bail out the big banking institutions. And fortunately, we bail out Detroit. And look what happens now. Car industry is on its way back, coming back in a roaring way. It's wonderful. So I have a feeling I respect people's different views, but my instinct tells me that now when things are tough, you don't impose more restrictions as we do right now in Greece. I think you need to impose restrictions, but at the same time sort of loosen the belt, I think.
If I bring you back to your movie career, Eric, you know, you portrayed John Jacob Astor in James Cameron's Titanic, which is actually going to be re-released on April 6th in 3D. I wanted to ask you, what was it like to be a part of such a historic movie?
Effectively, I didn't want to do it. I was talked into it by my wife and my son because they had enormous respect for James Cameron. And I turned down things before. So I accepted it, and very reluctantly, because there wasn't enough in the script. And then because I had a deal with Y&R, I couldn't really spend all that time with Titanic, so I had to bow out of two or three scenes, because I'd always, Y&R had priority. But was it interesting to work on it? It was interesting to watch James Cameron direct this extraordinary opus. He is a genius as far as I'm concerned. I have deep respect for him. And I always thought all along, as we were shooting it, I was one of the few people who predicted that it would be very successful because I said it was a soap opera. And I know how successful soap operas are, but I said this one is a very expensive one. So turned out to be right. But I must say I admire the courage, the brass balls of James Cameron, who kept on working, was not bothered at all by the fact that both 20th and Paramount, both studios, were shaking in their boots. They thought they would go down the drain because it had been the most expensive film in the history of Hollywood. So, but he stuck to his guns, and I've nothing but respect for him. I think he's also one of the most brilliant men in our business.
And a few years ago, Eric, you actually starred and executive produced a feature film called The Man Who Came Back. Was it challenging for you to not only have to act in the movie, but also be involved behind the scenes as an executive producer?
Good question. I loved it. I loved every aspect of it. But it came all to a screeching halt once you sign it over to a distribution company. That's usually when the music ends. They do with the film what they want and as they see fit, and they deal with a number of films at the same time, so it doesn't get the care and the love that you want it to get. I think the whole paradigm of for independent producers to put their heart and soul into something and finish it, and finally you make a deal with a distribution company and you never hear about the film again. And I think something is dreadfully wrong with that, and independent producers will have to find a different way to bring their products to the public.
Would you ever get involved in a project like that again, Eric, or did you get a bad
taste
in your
mouth? I would if I got my money up front, you know, I would, and then you don't care so much what happens with the distribution afterwards. But if you do it for the love of it, and even invest in the film, then by no means give it to a distribution company to deal with it afterwards, because you won't see a dime.
And, you know, you brought up Daytime just a few moments ago, again, about the Titanic movie and how, you know, you compared it to the two. I wanted to ask you, in the last couple of years, you know, we've lost so many Daytime programs, One Life to Live, All My Children. Does it make you nervous, Eric? Do you think the industry's in difficulty, challenging times?
Well, I found our ratings are strong, and there's no hole in the water. And people love to tell stories and love to hear stories. And some people call soaps the stories. And I think there's a reason for its popularity. But now that huge corporations have taken over a lot of the networks, it's all about the bottom line. And I think therein lies, you know, I think the fault sometimes. You have a corporate mentality that is interested in the bottom line and nothing else. Start dictating what is essentially a creative process. So, but it has always been thus in Hollywood. It has always been the conflict between show and business.
And Eric, what's it like for you when you meet some of your fans? Because I know you have such ardent supporters, and I know just, and I'm one of them. And so, and I feel like you are part of my family because I've watched you for so many years. Do you appreciate that your fans have taken you into their homes, you know, on a weekly basis, 5 days a week?
I appreciate that deeply, and I thank you for saying that. I've had nothing, I would say 99.9% of my experiences with fans have been wonderful. And I've loved it. Nothing but good experiences, I must say. Yep.
And what was it
and
like for you?
I appreciate it enormously.
What was it like for you when you actually received your star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame back in 2007, especially because you're the first German actor since Marlene Dietrich to actually receive one?
I was deeply touched by it. I got to tell you, that and the People's Choice Award meant more to me than anything. You know, to stand on Hollywood Boulevard, and obviously then one flashes back to when one came to that town, didn't have a dime in my pocket, and worked myself, you know, working for Beacons Moving Furniture and parking cars and doing all kinds of things and living from hand to mouth. Then to suddenly stand there, not suddenly, years afterwards, stand there, and it was very touching, I must say. And it was very touching, primarily because I know that one day my granddaughter, who I adore, will go there and say, oh, that's Oprah's star. And that's something very close and means a lot to me. Yep.
And what's it like being a grandfather? Because I know I've seen you in other interviews and you talk such glowing words about your granddaughter.
There's nothing like it. I love it. It's the best, I must say, the best feeling I've ever had. Now I have a second one, and she is now 6 or 7 months old. And Tatiana is eight years old, and I adore her. And Oksana is the youngest one. She is beginning to respond and smile and laugh, and it's so sweet. I grew up with you know, we were four brothers at home after the war. It was tough. Fights all the time, and played ice hockey and soccer and just sports all my life. Then I had my son, and I took him into boxing and all that. And now to have a little, you know, Tatiana is a granddaughter, and Oksana, it's such a wonderful feeling. It's so different. Girls are just so different. It's sweet.
And yeah. I have to tell you, when I see you on screen on YNR acting with some of the younger actors, I don't think you're acting, because you just seem like you're having such a great time with these younger actors, and the expression on your face just basically says it all, so I can imagine how you are with your own granddaughters.
Yeah, I love it. Just love it.
Thank you so much for joining us, and continued success on YNR and any other project that you take up.
You bet. À la semaine prochaine.
C'est bien ça.
Okay.
Merci beaucoup.
Oui.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci
Eric.
De rien. Mon plaisir. Au revoir.
That's award-winning actor Eric Braeden, who stars in The Young and the Restless as Victor Newman. Check out his website, ericbraeden.com. Eric is also going to be coming to Montreal on Saturday, March 24th, as part of the National Women's Show. You can find out ticket information at nationalwomenshow.com. That just seems to put a spring in everyone's step, and that includes a lot of excitement when it comes to what will be the hot spring and summer fashion trends. To give us an idea what we should be on the lookout for if we want to be in the fashion know during the warm weather months is Nikki Blazina, who is a regular contributor to MTV Canada's fashion, beauty, and lifestyle blog, and who also runs the popular fashion blog A Haute Messe, which you can check out at ahaute-messe.ca. Nikki, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Now, Nikki, before we get into the hot fashion trends for the spring and summer, can you please tell us about your blog and how you got it started?
Sure. My blog is called A Haute Messe. Started it a couple of years ago when I was kind of in school and trying to figure out how I wanted to kind of make my way into the fashion industry. So a friend recommended that I start a blog, and I was really nervous to do it at first just because a lot of style blogs obviously include like putting photos of your own outfits on the internet, and I thought that kind of seemed like a horror movie waiting to happen, like putting pictures of myself in cute outfits online and just like being murdered one day. I don't know. I'm a little paranoid. Anyway, I did it regardless and kind of took the plunge and decided to indulge in my narcissistic side a little bit. And it's been it's been amazing ever since. I can't even believe the cool things I get to do, like this interview, for example, just because I started a blog. So.
And have you always been into fashion and personal style?
I have, yeah. I've always been interested in fashion growing up. I always kind of joke with my parents that it's because they put me in Catholic school my entire life. So this is your fault. I had to wear a uniform every day. So, and then I was also a competitive figure skater when I was younger, too. So I demanded creative control over everything that I wore and designed all my outfits. And I remember being in, like, grade four and, like, sketching dresses and pretending I was a fashion designer way back in the day.
and with your blog, you know, I was going over it and having a good time checking things out. And I find like you have a really good tongue-in-cheek way about writing the blog. Was that, you know, something that was conscientious on your part to sort of have fun with everything?
Not at first. To be honest, I started my blog as more of a way to make professional connections. So when I first started it, it was kind of like the job interview version of me online. Like I kept it really professional and like, look at this beautiful collection by so-and-so, and this is the trends we can incorporate from it. And I tried to make it very, like, fashion-y, and then it kind of took me a little while to just decide to use my own voice. Like, I'm a very sarcastic person. I don't really take things too seriously, to be honest. So once I started being more myself, it was a lot easier to write, and I was a lot more comfortable with it. And I found that people kind of that's when people started to respond to it a lot, too. Was when they're kind of like, oh, like fashion is fun. You don't have to be a fashion snob to enjoy it. You can just kind of have fun with it, make fun of yourself. And if I want to wear something that people think I look insane in, that's cool. But I know I look insane, but I'm okay with it too. And I can make fun of myself for wearing it. So.
And what's your process, Nikki, like for you to actually, you know, find posts or create posts to write about? Is it you being out every day or just seeing something when you're out and about, maybe going to buy the newspaper?
It really depends. Like, a lot of stuff I kind of plan in advance. Like, in a couple weeks, I'll be doing something on, like, denim trends because, well, we'll be talking about this later, but there are a lot of really cool trends for denim spring. So, like, there's stuff like that that I know I want to write about in advance. But a lot of stuff, especially the personal style stuff, it kind of just happens. Like, if I'm out and I happen to have my camera with me and I'm like, oh, I'm wearing something kind of cool today, I'll take a picture. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, I wear terrible things all the time, too, and I just don't put them on my blog. So it depends. It depends on what I'm doing. It depends on, like, what I'm reading, what I'm listening to. So it's a bit of both, for sure.
And if you are coming up to a particular season or holiday or something where people might need to dress up, let's say for office Christmas parties, do you plan that well in advance as well to sort of have a real sense of where you're going and to help people get prepared for, let's say, these Christmas office parties?
Yeah, I definitely do. I do a little bit of work with Shit Quattro for Women, actually. I'm kind of one of their three national spokespeople. So I do a lot of the seasonal stuff for that with them because that's more of the audience that responds well to that. More like women who do work in that corporate environment. I find a lot of people that read my blog are people who are a little more adventurous with fashion. So they like to get inspiration, but they don't necessarily need that guidance in terms of like where to shop and what to buy. So I do the seasonal stuff, and I do plan it in advance, but I just kind of, the other avenues I contribute to are kind of more where I end up posting that content, so.
And when I was going over your blog, I'm glad you mentioned the word adventurous, because I felt very adventurous when I was going through the blog and some of your pictures and stuff, and it's really cool, and things very funky, and I would say definitely left of center. And something I wanted to ask you, because of reading your blog and seeing that you're adventurous with some of the fashion choices, do you think it's important for both men and women to be a little bit daring in their personal style so that they don't get, I guess, caught in a rut for several years?
I think so. I just think it's really important to have fun with fashion. I mean, I know I wear like head-to-toe floral pantsuits and enormous floor-length skirts, so I know that's not for everyone, and I don't think everyone necessarily needs to do stuff like that, but I do think it's really, it's important to be adventurous and have fun, and you do need to try new things. Like, I find so many people are almost scared of fashion. Like, the one thing people always say to me is like, oh, I just don't think I can pull that off. And that's like the last thing I ever want to hear, because you don't know that you can't pull it off until you try it. And if you can't pull it off, you'll know once you see yourself in it. But I just always think people should give everything a try. I mean, if you like something, why not try it? And if it is a huge flop, then delete those pictures off Facebook and move on. It's not a big deal.
Joining us on the show is Nikki Blazina, who runs her popular fashion blog, A Oat Mess. Check it out, aoatmess.ca. Now, Nikki, what is your opinion on being trendy, I guess, when it comes to fashion and accessories? Because I know some people are afraid of the word trendy.
I think there's a time and place for all trends, and I think that, I mean, you can be trendy and not even know it. Like, just by buying what's in store right now, you're probably giving into a lot of trends that are current right now. So I don't think you should try every single trend. I think if you like something, then you should try it. And I don't think people should ever feel obligated to try a certain trend. At the end of the day, you look good in what looks good on you, which sounds so stupid, but it's so true. Like, you'll always look on style, you'll always look sophisticated, and you'll always look really good if you're wearing what works for you. And if that's not a specific trend that's in style right now, another one will work. So.
And do you suggest, Nikki, you know, when people go out shopping, maybe if they've been caught in a rut for a bit, is it important that they either maybe take a friend with them that is a little fashion forward or fashion savvy, if you will, to help maybe push them a little bit forward, or maybe even get out of their comfort zone and, you know, ask that salesperson what they can do to spruce things up or get out of that proverbial rut?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes your friends will have ideas of things that will work for you that you will never think of yourself. And salespeople are great. I mean, I know you often feel like people are just pushing product on you, but even if that's the case, you're there to spend money anyway. And if they have good advice to offer, you might as well take it. I mean, read blogs, read magazines. Sometimes you just need to gather inspiration from other people and from other resources. And yeah, why not bring a friend with you? It's more fun that way anyway. It's like sometimes if you go shopping by myself a lot, because, well, I do most of my shopping online. So when I do go shopping, I just kind of run out and run back in, and it can be really depressing. I'm like trying to find new stuff. I'm just like, I'm not into anything. But if I have a friend there with me and they're like, no, that's awesome, like, you should definitely get it. It can totally change your perspective on certain things.
And what are your thoughts on online shopping, Nikki? I know you just said you do a lot of it. Do you recommend it for a lot of people, or is it sort of down to a science if you are trying to get the right sizes and shapes and all that kind of stuff?
I personally love online shopping. I can just be sitting on my, if I can't sleep, I'll just online shop, which is not good therapy for your wallet, but I think it's great. Like, there are certain things I won't buy online. I mean, shoes are really easy to buy online because they're generally the same size and everything. Dresses are pretty easy. Stuff like, I mean, there are definite things like pants, for example. Unless you know a brand really well, I wouldn't recommend buying stuff like pants or something really fitted. Like, I would never buy a really tight dress online.
Okay.
Unless I already know in advance how it's going to fit. So unless you're really comfortable with a brand, I would say play it safe. Or you can always just go to a store and try it on and then decide whether you're going to buy it online or not. Like, I find a lot of online stores actually have better prices than actual stores do. Like, I was looking at a pair of jeans yesterday, actually, on ShopOp.com, and they were $75 cheaper online than they were at Holt Renfrew. So stuff like that, I mean, you can definitely save a little bit of money by shopping online. So, I mean, I would go to Holt Renfrew, try on those jeans to make sure I had my size right, and then purchase them online. Sorry, Holt Renfrew, but
no,
that... it's true.
Well, I think
I did that this weekend.
I think it's important that people recognize that, because I think a lot of people are afraid of the online, at least shopping for themselves, like fashion-wise. I think a lot of people are quite willing to maybe buy books or tech toys, but when it comes to something that's actually going to physically be on their body, I think a lot of people are frightened of it.
Totally, and it's understandable. And I mean, you get kind of stressed out just thinking, like, if it doesn't fit, like, how am I going to return it? It's going to be such a hassle. But I mean, it's 2012, and stores have figured this out by now. Return policies are great. Everyone sends a return slip and has complimentary shipping back with their return. I mean, it's pretty hard to come by a store that has a bad return policy right now. So if you check out my website, I'm always posting links to where I shop online. So I promise you, they're good.
Fantastic. So now if we sort of move forward and talk about, you know, spring and summer, we're kind of, you know, inching through spring right now. And I know, depending upon where people are in the world, because the show right now is online, it's across the world, so I've got a lot of listeners all over the place. But again, we're marching through spring. We're heading into summer in many parts of the world. What are things that people should be on the lookout for these next, you know, 6 months or so?
Well, you have probably noticed, well, like I was saying earlier, denim is kind of one area where you're going to see a lot of trends taking place. There are definitely five or six major trends that are coming out for spring, summer. Denim is where you're going to see a lot of them. One of them I will definitely say is prints. You're going to see a lot of floral prints, graphic prints, whether it's on dresses, trousers, denim. Florals and bright prints are huge this season. You saw them all over the runways. They're in almost every store right now. And they're awesome. They're so much fun. And it's such a great way to kind of brighten up, Whereas it makes you feel like you're wearing something a little bit riskier too, even though there's no chance you'll look crazy. I promise you'll look really good.
And is those floral things, Nikki, something that all shapes and sizes can get away with, especially if they're careful about what they're looking for?
I think so. I, for example, wear a floral blazer with matching floral trousers. Like, I'll wear a floral pantsuit, and I know that that's not going to work for everyone. And I know that I kind of look intense when I'm wearing it, too. But it's not about taking these runway trends literally. I mean, of course, everything you see on a runway is going to look amazing when it's on a 5'11 beanpole, right? But, like, wear a floral blouse, try wearing a floral blazer, try wearing floral pants. Like, there are different ways and different pieces that you can incorporate into your wardrobe to try this trend. So, I mean, depending on your body type. Like, if you are a bit bigger on the bottom, then maybe wearing floral trousers isn't going to work for you because you might not want to draw that much attention to those places. But why not try, like, a nice tailored fitted floral blouser? Blazer. I can't even speak English anymore. But that's a way you could do that if you have that type of body type. And on the other hand, if you're a little bit smaller on top, then wearing that floral blouse will kind of draw up. I mean, I have, like, the smallest boobs ever, so if I want to wear, like, a floral blouse, that's going to draw the attention up a little bit to my face and make me look a little more balanced out on top.
Okay.
Other trends you are going to see... Pastels right now are also, florals you're going to see in bright colors. You're also going to see them in pastel colors, but overall, color is huge this season. So another trend in terms of color you're going to see are pastel colors. And again, you're going to see a lot of that take place in denim. So like pastel denim, skinny pants, those are huge right now. And they're so, like, it's Easter colors, and they're so spring, and they're so happy, and they're so cool. So I recommend everyone pick up a pair of pastel denim and try that out this season.
And you mentioned the skinny pants. Is that something as well that anyone can wear, like whether you're in your teens, your 20s, your 50s, like is that something that a lot of people can get away with, or is that really for the younger set?
I think that really depends on the fit of the pants. I mean, if you're of a certain age, I don't think you should be wearing pants that look like they were sprayed on anyway.
Right.
Even if you're a teen, you shouldn't either, because that's just kind of vulgar. So I think fit is huge. The rise of pants is really important. I hate low-rise jeans, but I understand that a lot of people love them. But I would say, like, if you go for kind of a straight-cut, mid-rise pair of pants, I'd say that's the most universally flattering. So it really depends on fit.
Okay, fantastic. And I think, again,
comfort as well.
And comfort. Okay. Yeah. And I think it's important for people to recognize where they're at, and not that they can't, be funky or whatever. I think there's just ways of being funky and being consistent and flattering yourself and not looking strange.
Yeah. I mean, like, my mom will wear like straight cut denim, but she will definitely not be like, look at me, I bought a new pair of like skin tight jeans, because she just dresses well for her age and knows what fits and what looks good. Right. And I mean, anyone from age 15 to 65, you, as long as you know what fits you, what looks good, and what's appropriate, I mean, then why can't you wear a nice pair of pastel pants?
Exactly. And you said with the pastel, what kinds of pastel, again, is it everything in that sort of pastel palette, or is it specific colors?
I'd say it's almost everything in the pastel palette. My favorite colors that you'll see right now are kind of that melony orange, a nice lemon yellow. Shades of mint look really good for pants as well. And then you'll see kind of a muted down coral and lavender as well.
Okay.
I would say those are kind of like the top five colors to go for.
And those are colors as well that can go with guys, like if they're willing to look away from the blue and the black for a hot minute.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fantastic. Good to know.
I would love to see a guy wearing like a nice pair of pastel pants. It's cool when you see guys kind of take risks like that. I mean, the trends I'm generally talking about are for women's wear, but I've definitely seen guys wearing them as well, and it's cool. It looks great.
Cool. Awesome. So
what? Preppier.
A little preppy. Yeah, that does come to mind, preppy. That, because it reminds me of actually when my sister was sort of in high school, and that was the big thing as well for them to look preppy. And I remember the pastel colors at that point too. So that's cool. So we got the pastel and the floral prints, and what else do you have going on?
Other stuff going on right now. I would say there's a bit of a sportswear inspirational thing happening in clothing right now. So Alexander Wang did a really great collection for Spring 12, which was a lot of mesh and more like athletic looking clothes. And that's definitely taking off a little bit for more mainstream clothes as well. I just picked up a great pair of, they're almost like leather running shorts at Zara the other day. And I mean, you can kind of dress those down. You can wear those to the beach, or I mean, you can even wear them with heels. So definitely in terms of like shorts and kind of jackets and sweaters, more like mesh fabrics, a little bit of leather, some more like perforated jersey as well.
And Nikki, are those Lululemon things like still the deal this year?
For the gym.
Okay.
You can wear that to the gym.
I see a lot of that out, like, and about. Like, I see a lot of women wearing that, not just to the gym. So that was kind of my question, because I see a fair amount of them on the sidewalk, you know, running errands or doing whatever.
I think gym wear should stay in the gym. If you're going to be wearing yoga pants, wear them to yoga class.
Nice, okay.
But I get it. I mean, sometimes I'll throw on a pair of Lululemon pants and run to Safeway. I mean, whatever. Nobody's perfect. I'm not going to go throw on an outfit just to leave my house for 10 minutes. But I really have to draw the line when it's like you're going out for a day and you're wearing gym clothes, or you're going out for lunch with friends and you're wearing gym clothes. Like, that's one of the reasons why a few Canadian cities were named as the worst dressed places in the world. So we just need to make a little bit more effort. This whole sportswear-inspired trend, it's not actually wearing sportswear out, like putting on a pair of like running shorts with heels. It's kind of taking that silhouette in like a silk fabric or in a leather and having that kind of running short silhouette and wearing that with a pair of heels. But it's not too literal.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you clarified that. Like I said, I'm really glad you clarified that, because I've seen, a fair amount of the yoga pants out and about and not just at the gym. So I'm glad you you clarified that.
Leggings.
So, yes.
Leggings are not pants. It's like the number one rule I try and tell people is just that if they're not pants, they're not pants, so don't wear them. They're leggings. Don't wear them as pants, please.
Awesome. Okay, so what else do you have for us?
So we talked about prints, sportswear, pastels. Another trend, again, with color would be really bright colors. You're going to see a lot of neon this season. Again, you're going to see the denim. Denim's really, really great right now because you see all of these trends available in denim, and that's such an easy way to try them. Which is really fun. So you're going to see a lot of bold and bright colors this season. So really, really rich hues, bright neons. They're super easy to wear. I mean, that's another thing that people are kind of scared of, I find, is that they're nervous to wear a lot of color. And even in places like New York, which is one of the most fashionable cities in the world, people there wear a ton of black. And I know when I go to New York, I'm sure people think I'm crazy because I'm wearing so much color, but it's super easy to wear. Color blocking is so much fun, and it just, I mean, it can brighten up your mood, and it's great. I'm such a fan.
And I wanted to ask you, with all of this, Nikki, you know, you've talked about the pastels and the prints and the sporty sort of wear, the trend there. With all of this, how important is your footwear choices? Because I'm assuming that makes a difference as well.
Yes, footwear makes a huge difference. Generally, everything looks better with heels, first of all.
Okay.
Because, you know, they lengthen you and you kind of slim out a little bit when you're longer. But with footwear, if you're going to be wearing something that's really bright or really printed, I would say kind of tone down the footwear. So just wear like a basic sandal or a basic pump. I love wearing footwear. I mean, you can get footwear that's printed and footwear that's neon, and I love that, and I think it's great. But I think if you just don't want to be wearing too much of one thing at once. It's like picking your battles.
Right.
Just like focus. If you want to try these trends, focus on one thing. Don't wear everything that's that trend. So don't wear like printed shoes with pants and a top and a blazer. You can do like one or two, even three sometimes, but just footwear, I would say if you're wearing something that's a little more bold, tone down the footwear.
And regarding accessories as well with all of this, you know, do they really make or break the outfit too?
Yeah, I mean, I don't ever see accessories as breaking an outfit unless you're wearing way too many. But again, that's a personal style thing too. I know a lot of people, I mean, right now, if you look at different fashion blogs, wearing a ton of bracelets, big, bold necklaces. I mean, that's a big trend right now. I remember there's an old saying that's like, put on all your jewelry and then take one piece off. So, I mean, that's just a personal style thing. If you want to be wearing a ton of jewelry, that's up to you. Try not to overdo it with accessories if you're going to be wearing really bold colors and really bold prints, because if you are doing something that's really attention-getting, then let your outfit speak for itself. But don't let that stop you from having fun with accessories, too, because they are fun too.
Exactly.
Everything's fun. That's like my main, like message.
Fantastic. And before I let you go, you know, I guess something that I wanted to put out there for everyone who's listening is, what would be an important couple of tips coming from you for anyone who is sort of heading out there right now to add a new touch of flair to their spring or summer wardrobes?
Try everything on. That's like the best tip for shopping. And I mean, I know you can't do that if you're shopping online, but if you're unsure of sizes, then that leads me to my next tip. If you're unsure of sizes, or you might be between sizes, always size up and then go to a tailor. Don't let sizes kind of mess with your head, because every different brand fits differently. I can be anywhere from a size 0 to a size 10, no joke. So don't ever like let that kind of mess with your head. Don't feel bad if you have to size up in anything. And I mean, yeah, I feel awesome when I have to size down in something, but it's... sizes kind of don't really mean anything anymore. And if you are in between sizes, always, always, always size up and go to a tailor. And even if something doesn't fit well in the store, just kind of take a look at it, play around with it. And if you can see that, if you really, really like it and you can see that it has potential, then take it to your tailor. If the store has a good return policy, in case they can't, but take it to your tailor, see if they can do something to make it work for you. And that's leads me to my last tip. Find a good tailor. They can make all the difference. If you can go to Value Village and buy a $10 dress, take it to a tailor, and they can, I mean, especially with stuff like floral prints that come back season after season, you can go buy a really, really cheap dress at a thrift store, take it to a tailor, and they can make it look amazing for you. So find a tailor that works for you, one like whose prices aren't too bad and can help you out.
Fantastic. Nikki, thank you so much. You've been amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. That was fun.
That's Nikki Blazina, who runs a popular fashion blog at Haute Messe. Make sure to check her out at haute-messe.ca.
Bring on the Remus.
Never look back. I thought I knew what love was. What did I know? Those days are gone forever. I should just let them go, but...
Well, there you go. That pretty much does it for this very special edition of The Kelly Alexander Show. And I want to give a big shout out to my technical producer, Esteban Vargas, for doing such great work as per usual. And I would like to leave you with a positive quote of the week, this time from Marianne Radmacher. Live with intention. Walk to the edge. Listen hard. Practice wellness. Play with abandon. Laugh. Choose with no regret. Continue to learn. Do what you love. Live as if this is all there is. Have a great week. Any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.